Stormy Night segment. We get listening now to readings of the top true, capital T, ghost story winners. And if you are interested in this, it's right on the homepage in the big banner. And James has put up the three winners. All the entrants are up there if you want to read them. They'll be posted as well. Now, the guidelines for the stories were the same as always. How many words?
I think we said around 1,500.
Something like that. Okay,
I mean,
so...
As a max.
Right. Right. It's hard to read when there are big paragraphs. Keep that in mind, folks.
Yeah.
It's best like our... Ghostly Soldier, which is the first placed grand prize winner. The second graph is enormous. It should be three graphs. It's just easier for people to read, and that doesn't demean in any way, shape, or form from the fact that you won. And it is very well done. Dan sent it in, and Brad, the master of reading, is going to do the honors and read this story to us. So let's go.
Let's go. I'll probably read it in a little differently than it might have been written, but
what,
I will read
back
it.
To front?
No. All right, let's go. The following is a true story that happened to me and my family on a vacation trip to the Little Bighorn National Battlefield. My wife, kids, and I went out to the Little Bighorn and Curl Agency, Montana, in 1992. I have a great uncle named Miles Teo, who rode with Custer and was the commander of Company I. I wanted to see just where he died. I had to explain to the Rangers, those who were guarding the battlefield, the places where you can't go, who I was and how I was related to Miles. And after I told them in detail my relationship, they allowed me, and only me, to go where he died and do a rubbing on his stone. When I finished, we decided to go further into the battlefield. It was about 11 a.m., 105, as we drove out to Reno Benteen Ridge Battlefield on the south end of the site. We were the only ones foolish enough to go out there in that heat, and there was not a soul in sight. When we parked and got out and started to snoop around for a while, a soldier in full uniform came over to the ridge from the direction of the river. We started talking with him about the battle, and the kids were asking questions, and
he looked wiped, bush tired.
Yeah. Wait a minute, I just moved it up and lost the one, whatever, so we started talking. He looked bushed, so I went to the cooler and gave him a Pepsi. He looked at it very strangely, but didn't open it. We explained our relationship to Miles, and the soldier started telling us things that only a person who knew Miles could know, such as Miles was a spy, an informer, assassin for President Grant. Grant hated Custer for for a slide at the end of the Civil War, and Custer was going to run for president after the battle. Then the soldier told us how Uncle Miles was loved by his men because he shared his liquor. This was something I'd always wondered about, but I didn't want to ask him if Uncle Miles was a mean drunk. Miles supposedly had numerous casks of whiskey with the pack train. How Custer was shot. He told us how Custer was shot as he tried to cross the Little Bighorn in a flanking maneuver. The soldier told us that Uncle Miles was a crack shot with a rifle, and how after they, Custer's battalion, was pushed up onto Custer Hill by the Indians, Miles tried to save his own company, but before he left, knowing it was a futile effort to escape, he put a round into Custer's head for getting all of Miles' troopers killed. Suddenly the soldier said he had to get going. We thanked him. He turned, went back over the ridge, still carrying the can of Pepsi, and out of sight, we went back to the car. I thought that was pretty interesting, but didn't give it too much thought, and then I started to wonder how he could have known all this, because everyone that went with Custer was dead, and the story couldn't be told unless that soldier was there himself. We'll never forget him. Honestly, the air seemed to be charged with electricity like heat lightning when he came into view. His eyes were piercing, like he was looking right through me. His voice sounded hollow, distant, with only a slight drawl. He was a sergeant. His uniform was dusty, dirty, and worn. He wore a kepi, which is like the little cap the Union soldiers wore,
sure,
flat on top and mm-hmm. under the brim. He wasn't clean-shaven, but he wasn't bearded. He looked withered and raw. He seemed awestruck by my wife and kids, like he had a wife and kids and missed them very much. If he was a reenactor, he could have won an Oscar with his performance. He never acted or sounded like a ranger in the living history mode. He just referred to each area as over there, and not by its common battlefield name, the battlefield name it would have today. Of course, at the time, it didn't have names. And he didn't point with his finger, but just like a Native American, he pointed with his nose, throwing his head back and using his nose as a pointer. The area around Reno Benteen and the path to Uncle Miles' marker stone was the most electric-spilled places I've ever been. I could almost hear the war cries of the Sioux warriors. Not spooky, but this sounds stupid or crazy. Almost like the old Twilight Zone episode about the National Guardsmen to go back to the time of the Battle of the Little Bighorn. I myself am a very believable Civil War reenactor. But that soldier never strayed out of character. I've never seen anything as authentic as he was. That's something that the wife, the kids, and I still talk about. And everything I've said is very true. Submitted by Dan. I think this one, because of its honesty, yeah. its directness, its yeah. using actual personages, and the fact that this man was a Civil War reenactor. It really seems as though they encountered a restless spirit there in that battlefield. And certainly there are so many reports, you know, in places like Gettysburg and Antietam.
Exactly.
And Little Bighorn, yeah. where the spirits still walk.
Well, he was a Civil War, is a Civil War reenactor.
Right.
You're not going to fool somebody like that.
No, no. That's why I thought it was especially a good story, because of that.
Now, these are true stories, folks. These are not fiction. Now, these are true ghost stories.
I think what we had this time, and I hope no one takes offense by this, but the stories this time all had the ring of authenticity.
Hmm.
They are written in, and again, don't take offense, but
they weren't pushed through a spell checker and a grammar checker and
no,
all that. They were just
no,
written
they
like
were
people.
Not.
No, and they
there
were
are grammatical
what,
errors, yeah. there are spelling errors, and written in, like you say, not we've in the past, and we've never said professionals couldn't enter, But we've had in the past, I think, some that were obviously written by professional writers. They're very smooth. No,
these
are
crafted. They're very raw and honest and
raw
fascinating.
Raw and honest, that's the word.
All right, let me start on this next one before we have to take a break here. And
just let me tell you one thing.
Go ahead.
Okay, this is unusual in that Bluey is actually telling the story. Bluey Morgan.
Okay, yeah, I got that. All right, I guess we can just do a minute or two over here. Then we're going to have to pause and do our other break, so we'll do that. In January 1977, two well-known musicians from Cairn, Australia, Bluey Morgan and Gary Ward, were driving an old 1960 British-made van carrying Gary with his double bass home to the Gold Coast and Bluey with his drum kit to Melbourne, as both of them were looking for work due to the lack of it in the tropical city of Cairns. I had been driving all day, so we pulled in to get an evening meal at a hotel in Rockhampton, about halfway between Cairns and Brisbane, as the rain was beginning to come down pretty heavy. Whilst having dinner, we were talking to some locals who recognized us from a few past concerts in Rockhampton and in various bands over the years. We were also told that strange things had been happening on the road ahead and in the local area, and that we should be careful whilst traveling in this area. So we also decided not to drink alcohol whilst eating and to keep our wits about us, something musicians learn well. And we'll be right back with more. Let's get back to our story. We were then introduced to the hotel owner, who told us of many weird traffic accidents with some mysterious disappearances, strange lights and sounds in and around the areas we were about to drive through. These stories were apparently very well known and also recognized and recorded by the local people. Needless to say, we were not prepared to stay overnight either, thinking that their stories were merely a ploy to get more overnight customers to stay at the hotel, so we decided to press on in the rain anyhow. About 40 minutes after leaving the hotel, and whilst the van lights were on, high beam, we noticed a chap standing at the edge of the road in the rain. He was clothed in a check shirt, jeans, and straw cowboy-type hat, and was also waving for a lift or a ride. We immediately looked at each other. Didn't know what to think, said nothing but began slowing down. We were also remembering what was told to us by the locals and the owner of the pub, so we decided to slow down, drive past and check him out, and then decide whether or not to give him a lift. We noticed one strange thing in particular, and that was quite clearly he was not wet. We did not stop, and to this day I still feel very odd about the situation. A few miles down the road, I felt bad about this man standing in the rain and what he must have thought when we didn't stop. But at the same time, I also remembered that after passing him, we could no longer see him in the rearview mirror, so we thought he had ducked back under a tree, maybe, and never gave it another thought. Settling back to the drive ahead of us, we began conversing about work, maybe, at the Gold Coast. Now, I want everyone to picture and remember this. There were only 5 cars on the road ahead, coming toward us in all of this time, period. But at no time did any vehicles go past our vehicle at all, traveling in the same direction. 40 or so minutes later, we noticed the rain was now becoming much heavier, so the wiper blades went to top speed, and the demister was turned on. However, not more than 10 minutes into this heavier rain, there he was again. The same man, with the same hat, the same clothes, the same wave, standing at the edge of the road, but this time he had a grin on his face, and he was very much still, as dry as a bone. Hey man, we're in the middle of nowhere. Where had this man come from? He never passed us on the road. He never got out of the clothes he was wearing because they were still dry. Gary freaked out. I freaked out. I also had no idea that an old van could actually move so fast. I think we set a new land speed record for the old vans, and we never spoke during that time, never looked at each other. For at least 25 more minutes, we just watched that bloody road ahead till the next town, every inch of it. When we arrived at the Gold Coast, we said nothing to anyone at all. Who would believe us? For at least a whole year, nothing was said by either Bluey or Gary to anybody, till I, Bluey, approached the police to basically find out whether or not this incident should have been reported. Whilst cross-checking the dates with incidents happened, we discovered there were two mysterious disappearances the same week we traveled on that very same road. The police were all of a sudden wanting every piece of information we could give. It seems that the chap we both saw hitchhiking on the road had been killed in a crash 13 years before we actually saw him. About 10 years later, the conversation arose once again because two people were found dead in their car on the same stretch of road in the pouring rain with no signs of an accident anywhere. Even as I write this, I still get goosebumps thinking of what events may have taken place if we had stopped. Recently, I watched an Australian movie called Wolf Creek, and the goosebumps began again. Most people I know will only travel that stretch of road in daylight, me included. Submitted by Bluey
there
Morgan.
You are.
Good job.
Good job.
Obviously, something's going on, folks.
Yeah.
Something very strange.
Wolf Creek is a very frightening movie, but it doesn't deal with ghosts. It deals more with, like Leatherface, an individual who captures young people and tortures them and so forth.
But didn't he do a talk show, Leatherface?
Pardon me?
Didn't he do a talk show, Leatherface?
I don't know.
Well, everyone's doing a talk show now.
I think he just grunts a little bit. I don't think
that's what I mean. That's exactly what I mean. You know, pretty soon, every other person in this country, what's left of it, will have their own internet radio show.
Oh, yeah.
I guarantee it. And what do you do? I've got an internet radio show. How many people listen? Well, my grandmother and my aunt. And I listen to it in reruns. And that's about it. But never mind.
God knows what you're saying.
And the problem is they're diluting, and I'm not saying they shouldn't, can't, you know, more power to them, but when they start to take up the time of what some very important people have to say, and a lot of people are real nice and I don't want to say no, they tend to dilute the guest pool, shall we say, and tire it out, okay? And I'm not saying anything about my program at all. Just the way it is.
Oh, no, and like you say, you can't say one can't have them, but just as anyone can write a book these days with the marvelous technology we have, anyone can have a talk show.
Well, you get calls all the time.
Now I understand your question, whether Leatherface had a talk show or not.
Okay, well, you get calls. Can you do a pro? And you have to say no. You just can't. You don't have the time. And when you look into these things, you know, where are they? They're internet radio, and that they go nowhere, basically. And it's tough. It's tough for everybody, because sometimes the intentions are good, but generally these are ego-driven ventures for the most part, I'm afraid. Be right back.
Mom, something is going on aboard this ship that they don't want us to see or know about.
But what is it?
We'll have to find that out.
Why wouldn't they even tell us the ship's name?
That's all part of it, Margo. While we were on deck, I looked at the lifeboats and the life preservers. The name of the ship was painted out on both of them.
Lamont, I almost wish we were back in the small boat.
No, Margo, you mustn't allow yourself.
There's someone at the door.
Yes.
Oh, do you suppose it's...
Wait. The door's being unlocked. Stand behind me, Margo.
May I come in?
Why, yes.
Thanks.
What do you want?
Visitors we seldom see. So I have come to call on thee.
Oh?
I have no rank. I'm just plain me. A grizzled old sailor who follows the sea.
Well, we appreciate your call.
Well, they're polite. See where their politeness gets them in the next reel. Could you understand any of that?
I heard Margo, so maybe it's Lamont Cranston and Margo Lane in the shadow.
They were on a boat, yeah.
Well, is that who it was?
Yeah, they were on a ship.
Okay.
Yeah. And all the names of the boat on all the life preservers and lifeboats were all, well, the name was painted out.
Well, when I heard Margo stand behind me, I thought that sounded like Lamont Cranston, who had the power
to cloud
men's minds so they couldn't see him.
Yep.
As the shadow.
All right. We have one more story here.
Oh, I think I can.
You can
go
handle this.
That.
One. Yeah.
This is from a man, we will assume. It just says, be kind to your buds as the contributor. And we'll say he, assuming that. He has just assumed a position with a major department store as the night manager. So he's fairly new to the store. We have to bear that in mind. All right. As one of my general duties, I was required to be the last employee out of the building each night, with the exception of two security guards who were on duty all night. My usual routine would be to walk to the entire store, starting on the first floor, working to the top, checking all the merchandise. Once I cleared an area, I would shut off the lights, and for the first level, children's clothing, on up to the top floor, make my way through the departments in the dark, give the store one final check. On this particular night, I had just done my first walkthrough. I'd finished checking the third floor and headed down the elevator to the second floor. As the elevator doors opened, I thought I heard what seemed to be a child laughing and what sounded like footsteps running away from the elevator doors. I thought to myself, I must be a child still in the store. So the two guards and I proceeded to turn on all of the lights and search the second level for the child that we presumed was still in the store. The two guards and I looked in every possible place that a child might hide. After an hour, we found nothing. So I instructed the two guards to go ahead, turn off all the lights, prepare to lock up the store. As the two guards secured the rest of the building, I decided to sit in the second floor, see and wait, and maybe the child would come out of hiding before I left for the night. Once again, I heard the child laugh. Not only did I hear the child laugh, but I also heard the sound of a ball being bounced on the ground. I quickly and quietly got up from the desk with flashlight in hand and headed for the most likely aisle, the toy aisle. Upon nearing the aisle, the sound of the ball and child's laugh grew louder. I was about to turn the corner to enter the toy section when a large rubber ball rolled out from the aisle as the child's laughter faded away. Startled from the ball rolling past my feet, I quickly but cautiously entered the aisle. Upon turning the corner, I used my flashlight, the whole while noticing that where the light had shone on the shelves, there were toys. All of these toys were once on the shelves high and low, and now they were all over the floor, the top, the bottom, shelf, everywhere on the floor. Yet there was no child to be found. I called for the guards to help once again search the second floor for the child that was apparently still in the store. Placing the merchandise back on the shelves and further searching for the child proved uneventful. We found no child. I notified the police about a child possibly still being in the store. and had them check their records for any child reported missing during the day. Nothing. After doing everything I could, I decided to head home. After instructing the guards, keep their eyes and ears open for the child and notify the police when they eventually found the child. The next day, I headed to work at my normal time, eager to find out about the child's well-being, who was left in the store the night before. As I entered the building, I was greeted by my boss, who asked to come into his office. As I sat down, my boss began to speak. "So, I see you ran into our little ghost last night." I, now a little confused, began to tell him what had happened. My boss then proceeded to tell me about a little boy and his mother who'd come to shop at the department store back in the early 50s. As the story goes, the little boy and his mom were shopping on the second floor. As the mother was heading to the elevator with the little boy, the child let go of her hand and ran back toward the toy aisle. When the mother noticed that her little boy had run away, she was already in the elevator and called for him to come back. The child heard his mother's call and ran back to the elevator, and then he tripped just as the doors started to close. Unfortunately, the boy's head was crushed between the closing elevator doors, and he was killed on the spot. This was before they had safety doors on elevators. My boss further explained that ever since that incident, every few months, weird things would happen on the second floor, mainly in the toy aisle, just as I had described.
Yeah, well, sometimes people just hang around, even if they're little people.
Yeah, I had an experience, and I still have shivers. To me, there was nothing, few things as scary in the day, back in the day when I was almost full-time investigating haunted homes. And in one home, there was the ghost of a little girl. And to hear her laughter, to hear her singing, to hear her talking, I was convinced that there was really a little girl there. But same way, whenever I would have it cornered, have the sound cornered, shine my flashlight at nothing. But there was nothing to me as eerie as that little ghost child's laughter. And singing just as a little girl would. Never forgotten it, my friend.
Well, we've heard the voices recorded. Dave and Sharon have presented them on this program. Ghost voices of people who are still here, hanging around. They don't want to go anywhere. To them, it's timeless. They're
timeless.
In the moment.
Timeless.
Well... be right back.
So those were our winners, and I think they were excellent stories, and there were so many. This was tough, too.
Yeah. Oh, it's a tough one.
Very tough, too.
Well, we've
very
been,
good stories.
Yeah. We have to pause, and we'll be back.
The shadow knows.
And he always did, didn't he?
Never missed him every Sunday.
That was that the big radio day?
That was the big radio day. Yeah, because then you went from there to Jack Benny and then to Fred Allen. In between was Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy.
Wow.
So that was the big day. Sunday was the big day.
Well, neat. Everyone's sitting around the living room with the big Stromberg Carlson radio there. And their minds creating images. No longer necessary in this day and age. The images are all created for you, telling you what to think, telling you what to see, telling you how to react, telling you what's funny, telling you what's not funny.
And there were real audiences there. So if a joke wasn't funny, they didn't laugh.
No, it did. It bombed. And when you bombed a joke on National Live Radio, the staff, I'm sure, never let you forget it. And the guy that wrote it, probably more often than not, was history.
But now with the laugh track, it says, "Good morning, Jane," and is met by outrageous laughter. You think, who are these moronis, you know, who laugh at everything these people say, you know? But I wanted to mention something about the contest, the short story, or the article contest. When Sherry finished reading them, she said, you know, not to demean other years, but she says, I think maybe
it's the best.
Best batch we've had. And
well, from
I
end
said,
to
I
end,
feel
yeah.
the same. But then we, you know, just to give a few pointers for next year, some of them were overly long. You know, they had a good story, but they just went on and on with
oh,
it.
Oh, they
and,
went through
and
the
of
limit?
Of course, that's fine when you're writing a novel, but when you're writing a brief article, you know, you have to have a pace. You have to have a rhythm to it. Writing a brief article is very much like writing poetry. You know, it has to have that rhythm. It has to have that grace. And a few selections, if there are entries, if they would have had that, you know, they would have been the winner. So just a little something to tuck away for the next year.
Well, can they shorten them down and re-enter them next year?
Oh, I don't think that would be a good idea. I think we should strive always for originality and something new.
Well, if it's, I mean, if
thousands and thousands of stories out
yeah.
there.
Yeah. All right, well,
but the people who sent them can send another story, absolutely.
You sure? I mean, if these stories are that, if one of these stories is that good, but it was too long, we need to salvage it.
Well, that's,
we could call it. We could have a rehab category.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I don't know. You're the master of the macabre, and you know those were good stories, though.
They were very good stories.
Come on, the Custer story, they don't get any better than that, and the Australian two guys driving, and
the rainy bizarre. Night.
And the ghost in the toy aisle.
And there are so many that were good. Again, as I say, a wonderful batch. And you know, just take a little more time. Really run it through. The secret of good writing is rewriting. So don't just write it and say, wow, I finished my story. There it is. Write it again. Cut it down. Go through. Shorten the paragraphs. Jeff mentioned one of the rules that journalists have followed for centuries. That's keep the paragraph short. It's more attractive to the eye. It keeps the page. It makes the page look neat. And it's more inviting if you see that white space. It looks more like dialogue. It looks more like that will activate your mind. To
action.
Keep your mind fulfilled and thrilled as you're doing.
Yeah, it's good. Action. Energy. Movement.
Action.
Another thing to do is when you write a paragraph, read it out loud to yourself.
Excellent.
And listen to it. You'll be surprised what you'll hear.
Excellent.
Don't just let your eyes and your mind do it. Read it out loud. Even if you're writing a sentence, read the sentence out loud. Now, did that sound the best it can? And if it did, fine. But it's you got to have that auditory. It for me, it's always important.
That's so great, Jeff. That's so great. I will write something and I'll tell Sherry, read this and see what you think. And she always says, sometimes to my annoyance, she'll say, no, you read it. And I'll say, oh! But every time you read it aloud,
did I write that?
That's excellent result. I mean, the advice. And you get excellent results. That's what I meant to.
Okay, well, that should help. Were they over the, and I didn't count the words, were some of them over the word limit then?
Yeah.
Okay. I just kind of skimmed
it. And, you know, we don't penalized if it's just a little
when
over.
When they were so long. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, anyway, superb. Again, tough to pick winners, but I do think the Custer story took the cake. I mean, you can just see that. And if that Civil War reenactor that wrote it was fooled and didn't... He was taken in, obviously, right from the beginning, that this was just a really good reenactor.
Exactly. Exactly. But then he got to thinking and there are some things, now we must, you know, we have to allow. We don't really know if Miles Keel shot Custer in the head because, you know, we found only bodies after Custer's last stand. But he could have, from what we know of history and what we know about Grant and Keogh and the mm-hmm. contempt they had for Custer.
Well, yeah.
I remember as a boy seeing they died with their boots on, and, oh, Custer was my hero. Custer was this. And then I began to read books and say, oh, man, this guy was really, and we can't say that word over the air, you know. The whole thing of the, we don't know who was there, and having this man provide things that we do know, and this man as a reenactor, I'm
right.
sure knew
yeah.
very well. Even
yeah,
though
yeah.
he's probably a Civil War, not a frontier reenactor, it just sounds like he's a history buff.
Exactly.
And, of course, he was related to, you know, a mm-hmm. well-known historical figure. So mm-hmm. he probably had been reading history ever since he was a child. So
right.
that's why, as you said, he thought it was another reenactor who really knew his stuff until
yep.
he said, no way.
Yep.
How could
yep.
he know all
Very
those things?
Good. All right.
And he didn't know what a Pepsi was.
We need to say goodnight here.
I'll see you in my dreams. Hold you in my dreams. Someone to the thrill of your charms, lips that once were mine, tender eyes that shine, they will light my way to night. I'll see
just amazing. Still amazing. It's never ceases to amaze me.
Now, and let me tell quickly. Hans has been ill today. So
oh.
he's been hiding under the couch in the oh. other room. And we tested. We turned it on, held up Mario singing, and Hans still came in to hear Mario's healing voice. think of that. He's been hiding all day. Mario brings him out.
That's amazing. No, it isn't.
It is amazing.
It is, and it isn't.
We just tested to see, will he come tonight too, like he does every night? And he did.
Well, I hope he feels better.
Well, thank you.
Little guy. All right, you two. Thank you. See you next month. And
indeed, happy Halloween to you and everyone.
And it was a wonderful art and ghost story year for the program and for all of you. Enjoy it. They're all posted for you. Take care. Give the lady a hug and give little Hans a hug, too. Okay. Good night.
Happy Halloween. Blessings to everyone.
Indeed. And good night to all of you. Thanks for being here. Have fun. Enjoy the archives. Remember, each day is a present. Make the most of it. Back soon.